back to This Week on Channel 9. I'm Quint Ruckus.
I'm Dan Fernandez. Got a full show, big one.
Huge, ginormous. So this is Mike Swanson created a Adobe Illustrator to Canvas, aka HTML5 export. So it can do, you know, like draw. It can convert your drawing and take your animations, and it even gives you code to make any Illustrator artist into an HTML5 person.
Yeah. So this is awesome. So basically, and people are probably familiar with Mike's other Adobe Illustrator, and if you're not, you should check it out, where he took Adobe Illustrator and had it export to XAML.
Yes.
So this works the same way. It's just exporting Canvas and JavaScript code. And it supports a number of things like triggers, animation, like deep fidelity. You can look at the code that's generated, and he even has some things that'll spit out code to help you debug if there's, say, debugging issues as well. So this is very, very cool. If you are an Adobe Illustrator user, walk, do not run to download this. And it's free.
Yes, free.
So MS Performance API. So I think we've talked about this before in terms of some of the APIs and some of the things that are going to be coming into HTML5, but specifically an API to do things like timed performance. So this is a simple DZone article that walks through just the basics of MS Performance, JavaScript object, and the types of time elapsed properties that it has. So you can kind of see just some of the different examples. You can see whether the object actually exists. The timing, navigation, start events, loading events, etc., and actually get end time, and then it just displays it in a pretty basic table. So for those of you just kind of looking at for performance APIs, this is a great one to just kind of see what's going on.
Cool. So Windows Phone 7 Marketplace application submission tips and tricks. This is by Coding for Fun and Channel 9 friend of the show, Annie Bellaloo. He goes through and talks about some of the things that will be little gotchas, and they can be expensive gotchas because some of them actually force you to have to do a full resubmit. So, like the big one is don't use transparent PNGs on your application icons in Marketplace. You do it in your application just fine, but what happens is when you have a transparent PNG, you're going to use probably a white image, and you have a white image on a white background with a transparency,
and you can't see anything.
And that's a big, big gotcha on a lot of apps that we're seeing. Another one is
the three images have to be the same, right?
I did not know that.
I think he made an allusion to it, and I think it was that they have to be the same image of the same thing in just different dimensions.
I mean, that makes sense because they're using that image in different areas.
Yeah, so I think and just to be fair, he also links to another post that goes through some other tips and tricks. But the two apps he submitted and where he's getting this feedback from are the Talking Ragdoll and Droppy Pop apps.
Yeah.
So he has experience actually submitting these.
Yeah. And then Coding for Fun, we have one of four apps we just released into the marketplace, got past ingestion, so it actually is on marketplace right now.
Sweet.
But we've gotten hit by overriding the back button is a big, big no-no.
Yes.
Make sure that the back button always works, as you will get bounced for it, because they definitely do check that. And even if you have like a little control pop-up, make sure that when they hit the back button, that pop-up goes away, because then you will potentially get bounced for that.
What's the right way to do that if you have a pop-up to do
you
that?
It all depends on how you implement the pop-up.
What are we doing? Because this is an about page.
Yeah, so we have an about Coding for Fun control right now.
Mm-hmm.
And what that control does is you pass in the page and the primary panel. And what I do is I hook into the back button pressed event. I cancel it because the control is already loaded. I cancel the primary back event, and then I call the closing event for that control, so then the control goes away. It all depends on how you implement your modal dialog boxes. That's
sure.
How I chose to implement it. In the future, and we may tweak them to use the pop-up primitive. this, I made them before I actually knew about the pop-up primitive in WP7.
Oh, really?
So there was, so there is, you know, it worked, so why reinvent the wheel type of things.
Okay. Any other things that people should know on marketplace submission? I was trying to think. One somebody said was HTML formatting doesn't work. So, like, they did HTML formatting, and then it just became this blob of text.
Big things for marketplace rejections, though, is prompting end user. If you're doing stuff like GPS, you have to prompt them.
Yes.
Your application is going to override Zune. So if you have a media element and that is playing music or something.
Background music, that, though. You're
thinking of the sound effect will get you bounced. This is for a media element. It will actually kill Zune playing in the background, and you will get bounced. So one of the apps that I submitted did get rejected as one of the points for that.
Okay, good, good. And just to finish that, on the background sound effect,
all I have to do is prompt an end user once.
Yes.
And just store that in isolated
storage. And on the media element, you prompt them once as well.
No, to my knowledge, you just have to say, hey, this app will override Zune playing just one time,
yeah,
and then that's all.
That's what I meant.
Yeah.
Okay.
It sounded like you wanted to I had a prompt twice.
Andy had another really interesting one, was making sure that you see, when you actually go through the submission, to make sure to see the subcategory. So, like, I think games, and you saw puzzles and
trivia.
That's
one of the things where you have
default.
To do a full resubmit. And that actually hit me once, because I went a bit too click-happy, and it defaults to game puzzles, and you have to be real conscious of that.
Yes, yes. So a lot of good tips and tricks. I don't want to spend the whole show on this, but since this is brand new ground,
yes,
if you will.
And I mean, you can assume a lot of these things are going to get tweaked in the future, and once they're better documented out in the wild, that people will be made aware of.
But it's good to know the gotchas in case you're wondering why your application fails ingestion. So this is by enemy of the show, Steve Marks, who clearly, I don't know if he's, you know, this is like Soviet Russia, there's only two colors here. And you really should have done green. If you're doing console command prompt, it should be green text on a black background, like
true.
1980s war game style. But, you know, if you remove Steve and actually, you know, like Windows Azure and the content of his stuff, it's good stuff, which is how you can actually build and deploy Azure from the command line.
Cool.
So it's you building your command line stuff and then actually doing a full deploy as well. So you have your configuration. And I think he even edits a web page in a command line.
So then you can just have a nice little fire this off from probably like PowerShell, bada bing.
Build command.
You do cruisecontrol.net and just, you know,
sure,
start cranking away builds.
Sure, sure.
So, 31 Days of Windows Phone 7 by Jeff Blankenberg. So he goes through and is going to have 31 examples, boom, 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 getting progressively harder on... cool things like input scope is an interesting thing. So people that aren't aware, on the phone, when you click on a text box, you'll get the keyboard, but you can customize what style keyboard that is.
Mm-hmm.
So like one big one that kind of shocks people is if you use the numerical scope versus telephone scope. I actually prefer to use telephone scope because you get like an actual D-pad versus 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 at the top. That to me wasn't very wasn't clear at the very beginning.
Sure.
But I prefer actually using the telephone pad more than I do the other style.
So I love this, if nothing else, you need a quick overview. Launchers and choosers is another kind of confusing one. Like, what does one, and launchers obviously take you and launch you, say, into Zune or into a browser or whatever. And choosers lets you, say, pick a photo from my library or something like that.
So there's an LG phone that can actually do DLNA. So basically that means you're playing the video from your phone.
Yeah, so in this example, it's actually flicking photos to the TV from Windows Phone, which sounds awesome. And so as What do we have to do to get a coding for fun implementation of DLNA? So that way, for example, you can make anything that could run code, and maybe even microframework's a little tricky, something that could do DLNA. So that way we can, for example, anybody that has a laptop, you can be like, and you get a picture, and you get a picture, and you get a picture.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of it is I would have to go in and or have someone figure out what is actually required to do DLNA.
Mm-hmm.
It could be because LG is a mobile carrier. I'm sorry, a mobile cell phone manufacturer.
But is it an API? Do you know anything about DLNA?
I know you can, some, but not enough.
Is it a spec? Is it a... Because it's doing over Wi-Fi, right?
Yes.
So it's got to have some sort of API where...
But I think it's a networking... style thing.
Well, then how is it able? So there's
because
no
they're an
Silverlight.
Because they're an OEM, they're given.
Our mobile operators have special APIs, so there'd be no way to do this in a typical app, is what you're saying.
I don't know without looking more into it.
Okay, an exercise so for the reader.
That's a nice little lawyer spiel.
Okay, this is a code project by Ian J. 1965, who actually didn't give his last name in the article, but it's a radio-controlled joystick using Arduino. So if you've ever seen those quadcopters,
yes,
maybe the best way to say it, the controls are really unintuitive for noobs. So the idea is to take an Arduino board and basically open up a joystick and actually do the radio transmission stuff. So this is pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah. I'm trying to find someone to do a Parrot quad for coding for fun. It's just, you know, who is the right person? So, out there on the internet, if you want to, tell us. So, this was an article by...
Elijah Miner.
There we go. He talks about how good C-sharp practices...
Probably easier to read.
I'm sorry.
Go on.
Good C-sharp practices can lead to bad JavaScript.
Yeah.
Like a big one that reading further down that I would have affected me was using 2 equals versus 3 equals.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to, in JavaScript to do proper comparison for like 0 does not equal tick 0 tick because they're two different objects. So using the 3 equal actually will return false, which is what you'd probably want due to how JavaScript handles variables.
Mm.
So it's very interesting. And he goes and gives, like, I think 10 different things to help improve.
Yeah, there's a lot of C-sharp developers that have to do JavaScript, and you should, I guess, be aware of the pain.
Yes, yes.
That you may face.
So.
Good stuff. So this is an article on Windows Azure team blog. And basically what goes through is it's a two-part series, and they've only published the first part at least, you know, by the time we're shipping, is how to basically build your own custom on-premise tool or services to send email. So this goes through like using a worker role that has a queue, and then the actual blob object, and then using an email forwarder services, and they go through some examples of email forwarding services to be able to use. And it's one of the things that we do have on our list is to add notifications.
Yeah.
When things happen on Channel 9. So obviously this is pretty interesting to us and maybe to other developers.
So the Silverlight Firestarter event done by John Papa, Silverlight
yeah.
TV. So this is all about Silverlight. It's happening in December. So
December 2nd, I believe it is. I feel it is.
We'll go with December 2nd.
Sure. And it'll say big fat fail if we're wrong. So. Scott Goo.
Scott Goo.
John Papa, Tim Heuer. Jaime. Rodriguez.
I know. They got
an after everyone. Party. Now, the big thing is, obviously, Nick Fillingham, people know him from Channel 9 Live, is actually going to be helping and getting this entire thing live. So you can go to silverlight.net and tune in. We'll actually change Channel 9, so if you're a Channel 9er, you just go to the site and you'll see that the Firestarter is going on live. Now, the question is whether the after party is going to be filmed, because that's what I would want to see.
Yeah, and I would not.
That would be awesome. It's like, wow, is that a lampshade on the goo? That's awesome. That is great. Let me rewind that in the Silverlight player.
Sweet.
Picks of the week.
Picks of the week.
So my pick, actually, Greg Duncan found this. It's extensionmethod.net. So what it is a collection of extension methods. It almost reminds me of...
reminds me of pinvoke.net.
Yeah, that's one. That was Adam Nathan's wiki for using pinvoke statements. The phpclasses.org. So it's like very common functionality that you need. Yeah. Like one example was, you know, I just did a search for assembly and it was like, ooh, load a resource from a stream. And it has the easy mode method that actually does resource loading and all that good stuff. So lots and lots and lots of good stuff here, especially if you're working with, you know, collections, except IEnumerables, different types.
Like a big one, link encrypt ones. And decrypt a string. I mean...
Yeah, because we do, our APIs are always like, it takes a stream object within this, and I just want...
It's like this much code.
I want to give you a string. I want to give you a string, and you give me back a string, and that string is going to be encrypted using this mechanism. That's all I want. I don't want to have to give you, but then I try and create a goddamn stream, but that's an abstract class, so then I need to find a stream writer, but... So angry.
So mine is the .NET Gadgeteer. We were talking about this earlier. Where
what is this?
It's I kind of call it more complex. It's electronics for I don't want to use the term idiots, but it's electronics paint by numbers.
I don't know what paint by numbers is. Damn.
So you know, so you get the little painting, and you have like one is blue, two is brown.
Okay.
It's kind of like that, where you have this board, and there's you know like 10 different little sockets you can put in, and each socket's labeled A, B, C, D, going down. So then you get a sensor, and that sensor says you know A, H, J. So that means that sensor can go into either A, H, or J port.
I love it.
And what's really cool, then, in the source code, when you're running it, you can go, you know, push button, blah, 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 and then you go equals, and then you say, and the constructor on that push button, you'll say which port to put it in, or is it in. And it's actually smart enough to know, here are the only ports that one can go into. So,
because it knows the type, and it knows what the plugin is. Sure, sure.
So if I have a push button... And it won't list like the port that the LED monitor will go in.
So up leveling. Why am I going to use this as a developer? Like, what are the key scenarios I'd use this for?
I would use this for rapid prototyping. This, literally, we built a I would call it a poor man's digital camera in four lines of code.
Okay.
And literally, we on cameras like click 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 boom.
So why is it only rapid prototyping? What if I wanted to build something more real?
Because that's very expensive.
They haven't said numbers.
When I use the term expensive, I mean you can to prototype items. It's very expensive, but then because this is designed for ease of use. Rugged. I mean, when they brought them to Maker Faire in New York, they had a, I guess, a 10-year-old or 12-year-old had a bunch of items actually plugged in, grabs it. Amateur hour.
Outlook is not supposed to do that. It should respect.
He grabs all the items and just rips them out. I mean, the object is a bit more rugged.
But if it's rugged, then isn't that... I would assume then...
But it has a lot of extra items also that if I want to build out a that's easy button.
Okay.
I could build that using this object, but then I would have to then build a second one after I've proven out my concept to reduce cost. You would not use this for production. You'd go then and figure out how to build it in a smaller scale.
Okay,
and cheaper.
I'll take your word for it.
Okay, I'll sell you an easy button for $100.
Yeah, I kind of want to use this in production. So that's why the thought of having to get a second thing just to make sure
that's how, I mean this is we're trying to find someone to build it for us right now.
Mm-hmm.
So what you saw is an MSR Cambridge object in conjunction
with the microframework.
That's
actually a really good point. So this is not like something people can pick up today.
Yes, it is. It is not out there today. I guess by spring, the goal is to have it out in markets so someone can buy it.
Okay.
And then depending on who makes it will directly determine what sensors are actually supported in the end. But right now they have, you know, Zigbee, Wi-Fi, Ethernet, you name it, they have it right now.
It sounds very cool and I want one. So, well, that will wrap up this week on Channel 9. And thank you, Mr. Clint. And we'll see you guys next time.
Thank you.